Fraudulent providers to Medicare and Medicaid make up only a small percentage of all providers, but they account for an outsized percentage of misspent dollars. One way to cut improper payments is to keep such providers out of the system in the first place, with stronger enrollment controls. That's according to the Government Accountability Office. Joining me with more on the latest look at this problem, Seto Bagdoyan, the Director of Forensic Audits and Investigative Services at the GAO. Seto, great to have you on.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Good to be with you.
So I guess if you don't get fraudsters enrolled in the first place, then you don't get so much fraudulent payment. What about the enrollment controls? How does this all work, and what is CMS not doing here?
Sure. My work looked at several things. PECOS is the central database for providers and suppliers for Medicare. And what we did was look at five things off the bat: address, location information, licensure, whether providers were deceased or excluded from providing services to Medicare, and then what happened with the criminal background checks, which was the subject of our April 2016 report.
I guess if they had a criminal background check, that would pretty much put them on the excluded list in the first place.
Well, they're mutually exclusive, actually. The excluded list deals primarily with provider fraud rather than criminal background or activity, so they are different.
Wow. I would think that fraud of Medicare or Medicaid would be criminal, though.
Well, yeah, but the criminality we checked is, crimes against persons, sexual crimes, that sort of thing.
So, in other words, they might accidentally get a murderer on there who is otherwise a good provider.
Well, perhaps.
I guess that's maybe an extreme example.
Kind of far-fetched, but it could happen, I suppose, sure.
And in other domains, the government sometimes pays to addresses that are just empty lots and so forth. Did you find this kind of thing?
Yeah, one example we used in our report from last year in June, where we found one individual who had rented essentially a mailbox at a UPS store, I believe, or something similar, and had billed the government for almost $600,000 in services. So that was kind of the most visible example of what could happen if the controls don't work.
So how old is the PECOS system, and how primitive is it, would you say, compared to what it needs to be?
It's been around for a while. I don't think it's necessarily primitive. It is a very large system. It has well over a million people, providers, suppliers enrolled. And the controls have been relatively weak over time, and our work showed that to a great extent.
Isn't it a fairly simple proposition now to verify addresses? Aren't there services that can simply quickly look up an address and get the image of that is widely and publicly available in a matter of seconds?
Right. We used a postal service system, a software package that has some key flags for essentially the UPS store type mailboxes, empty lots, and just addresses that do not pass the muster with the Postal Service itself, and it cost us about $4,500 for a year's worth of subscription with regular updates, so it's not very expensive.
And probably if you leased it for the 10-year rate, you'd maybe get a bargain.
Yeah, the next renewal year was actually about $1,000 less, so you're right.
We're speaking with Seto Bagdoyan, Director of Forensic Audits and Investigative Services at the GAO. And in your report, you say that about 10% of CMS payments, which is higher than $700 billion altogether, are in fact improper. Are we able to tell how much of these improper payments go to people that should not have been enrolled in the first place? Because there are payments maybe that go to legitimate ones by mistake.
Sure. Yeah, that's the perennial question for everyone in this business to figure out what percentage of that improper payment amount is, in fact, fraudulent. And for now, we don't have the perfect metric for that, unfortunately. CMS posits that the improper payments occur essentially as a result of documentation insufficiencies and misunderstandings and things like that, rather than fraudulent activity. But it is difficult to prove one way or the other. Fraud is obviously very difficult to detect and prove. There has to be intent, and also you have to go through either a criminal, administrative, or civil procedure in order to establish that a fraud occurred.
And it's probably safe to say that the rules for payment are complicated enough that even well-meaning and reliable contractors or providers
make
mistakes.
Right. They are indeed. And of course, the volume, you're talking of hundreds of millions of transactions in terms of billings every year. CMS can only sample about 50,000 of those on a rolling basis. They target about a third of the states each year to do their sampling, and then they project that sampling into an overall improper payment rate.
So they really have an IRS level of challenge there.
Yes, it's enormous. I mean, the program itself, as I mentioned during my recent testimony, is well over $500 billion in expenditure every year. You have well over 1 million people and entities, including hospitals and labs and so forth, that provide services to Medicare. So the scope and scale of this makes it inherently vulnerable to fraud risk as well as improper payments.
All right, getting back to the PAYCO system, what is it you're recommending that they do to prevent bad providers from signing up and maybe to flag some of the ones that shouldn't be there in the first place?
Right. So back in June of 2015, in our original report on this, we recommended that CMS upgrade its location and address checking software to include the three key flags I mentioned earlier, i.e. whether it's a mailbox or not, whether it's a vacant lot, or it just does not pass muster with the Postal Service. It's just an unknown address or location. And also expand the information it has on providers' licensure history by adopting the centralized state-level licensure database, which we also obtained at very modest cost for a year of subscription, as well as update the guidance it has to its various contractors to go beyond accepting just plain self-reporting from providers in terms of the accuracy of their address in PAYCO. So those three things, over time, CMS has taken action. They are in the process of updating their software for both addresses and licensure. And once they give that a role in real life, they are considering updating their guidance to contractors. So those are steps in the right direction. They have to obviously execute well and sustain whatever results they achieve over time. Otherwise, we'll be back in a similar situation down the line.
It seems like these steps are, to use a cliche I hate using, but low-hanging fruit, especially when CMS is asking for big dollars for elaborate expert systems to try to detect fraud and so forth.
Right. These are modest investments with considerable upside in terms of return on investment. So we consider them basic fundamental things to do, front-loaded rather than the pay-and-chase model, which involves trying to recover improper payments in the end. You know, Elvis has left the building on that one, and the recovery rates of improper payments are very, very low.
Seto Bagdoyan is Director of Forensic Audits and Investigative Services at the GAO. As always, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.